Good morning. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to NABWIC Talks, the National Association of Black Women in Construction. We are the voice of Black Women in Construction. I am Tanya Marble, your host for this morning's conversation with Mr. Jimmy Green, President and CEO of ABC Construction. We are humbled and honored to be in position to speak with Mr. Green this morning on behalf of the National Association of Black Women in Construction. To all of our listeners, I want to also thank you for taking time out this morning to spend some quality time with us. It is going to be an amazing show indeed. Please share right now. Hit the share button so that your friends can tune into this show and be a part of our conversation with Mr. Jimmy Green, the CEO and President of the Association of Builders and Contractors. The website for Mr. Green's amazing organization is www.abcgmc.org. Please post and repost, tweet and retweet, email and share. Good morning, Mr. Green, sir.
Good morning, Tanya. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We are so excited to have this opportunity to talk with you about your journey, about your goals, aspirations, and your family. So let's just start out with ABC, the Association of Builders and Contractors. What an impressive site. Can you tell us a little bit about that organization and how it got started?
Sure. Well, the Association of Builders and Contractors is a lot older than I am, and I'm fortunate and blessed enough to be able to carry on its message. Essentially, what it does is it does three things, I think, incredibly well, and depending on your personal likes and dislikes, you can put them in any order you want. But the very first thing I think we do well is train. We train for the merit up those builders and contractors throughout the country who are looking to train their workers in safety and in any one of 11 to 15 different skill trades, especially on the commercial side. That's one aspect of it. The second piece that we do is we advocate, and I think we do that just as well as we train, and that's to create an atmosphere or a playing field that's conducive for our builders to thrive and to be successful and to keep employed those people that we're training. And then the third thing is that we build this network of family, quite frankly, as ancient of a theory as that is. We do like to do business with our own members. We like to create network opportunities. We do a host of events and social functions that, you know, that kind of take the sting out of that advocacy and that training piece and remind ourselves that we're people and all people of God. And that gives us this opportunity to kind of catch our breath and pick up the hammer or the welder or whatever it is the next day and go on about our journey again.
Wow. I thank you for your answer. There's a lot of affection and love in your voice and in your spirit for what you are doing through that organization. Now, you know, what importance do you rate being involved with local or national associations? In other words, does being involved, giving your sweat equity play a role in a person's success with these types of organizations?
There's no question about it. You know, I think sometimes we forget that we have a tendency, whether it's your organization or my organization or the Chamber of Commerce or party, you know, political parties, we sometimes act like those people are, you know, the associations are the people, when in fact it's people that are the associations. And so belonging to an association or recognizing an association without formulating real, concrete, and advantageous relationships make those associations nothing more than just you know, letters on a page. So it's incredibly important that we all foster the kind of relationship that makes these associations actually mean something. And it's us that have to go first and not the association. You know, I want to do business with people I shared interests with, not just because they're in an association.
Wow. You bring a very important point to my reason for being involved with the National Association of Black Women in Construction. I do not personally have a construction background, engineering, architectural, none of the above. Matter of fact, math has frightened me all my life.
you and me both.
The relationship that connects me to NABWIC is the love for the community, the give back, the sweat equity give back, the love of the founder for the people, for the people. And that's really what I look for in any association that I participate in, and of course agree with you. Now, you know, we really don't have enough time to go over everything that you have done during your wonderful journey. And I thank you. I'm going to let the listeners know at this time that you have agreed to give us a two-part, if not a three-part conversation. So I want to thank you for that. And one of the things, if you don't mind me going right into it, I'm really impressed by some of the institutes and things that you've been involved in.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know, what is the primary focus of the African American Leadership Training Institute? You know, and what are the ages of the young black men and women attending? And, of course, what is the criteria for attending such an academy?
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. You know, I'll start by suggesting to you, and as we carry on our conversation about who I am, I am nothing more than all the things I wanted to be and all the things I wish I had had. I was born and raised in Flint, Michigan. I'm a product of the projects. I grew up in the projects. I came from a single family home. My mother was an alcoholic. My dad was gone. And I always had this thought that, and I always knew there was a different world. I know this may sound so apathetic-ish, but I used to sneak off and read a lot. And I knew that there was a different kind of world than the one I lived in. And so I'd literally kind of fantasize about the sort of things I wanted to do in my life if I ever got a chance. And if you look at my bio and my bullet points and all the things I've done, I mean, it's really nothing more than a culmination of just some dreams that came true and this payback to myself for fulfilling some of those or having an opportunity. So my point being that you can't squander any opportunity to live the kind of dreams that you had. I've also, with this, and I'm getting into the leadership group, I also thought to myself, you know, if you ever get a chance to put back in somebody's life what you didn't have, as opposed to, you know, taking the idea that, you know, hey, I got mine, you get yours, I think my life, when it's over, will be much, much more further enriched. And I think that's that payback or that give back that each of us who have been blessed have to do. I don't think it's arbitrary. I think it's a have to. The Saginaw Valley African American Leadership Group was just that for me. When I got to Saginaw in 1980, I didn't have any role models or mentors. You know, I'm this project kid who got lucky enough to know that there was a different kind of world. I started out in banking as a teller, just looking for a job, quite frankly. I had a young family or about to start a young family. And I didn't have anybody who could help me navigate through you know, corporate America. But I hung in there. I have people, really, really great mentors who were white men who just took a real genuine interest in me. And it's funny because I used to mimic them. I would watch the way they dressed or watch the way they talked. And I would just, and I thought if I wanted to be like them, then I had to dress like them and I had to talk like them. So I became quite a mimic at picking up their mannerisms. So there weren't any classes I ever took that said, here's how you have to dress, here's how you have to act, these are the networks you belong in, those kind of things. And so years later, after I had done my deeds and picked up the opportunity to walk into boardrooms and sit on boards and have access, I vowed that I would make sure that young African-American men and women, especially as it relates to Saginaw, Michigan, which has a tendency to show a black face in the newsprint only when there is an arraignment or a prosecution or a drug bust or something like that, I was bound and determined that I was going to show a different kind of black face, a black face that I knew existed. I knew that there were some people who were out there who just wanted opportunity but had no access. So it was my choice at that point to take them in every room I was in. So when I started the group, I went to all the corporate folks I knew, and I know them all, and I said to them, I don't want your money. You know, I don't want you to sponsor this or sponsor that. Here's what I want. I want on one day out of a month, I want to be able to bring in 20 to 25 young black men, and this was black men initially, black men who have just this desire or an aspiration to do something, and all I want you to do is host them. I just want you to put in front of them opportunities to either work for your company or do business with your company, either or. And the program from there, I mean, it just took off like crazy. I think, you know, there were people who were just waiting for that kind of impactful program that didn't politically call it something else. It was for African-American men, and it was designed to paint a different kind of picture than the one people had seen. So it wasn't a, you know, a feel-good kind of thing. It was just changing the dynamics of the relationship between corporate America as it relates to Saginaw and people who wanted to work in it. So it was a win-win for everybody, and 6 years later, it's been kind of a defining program. 3 years into the program, I got approached by black women who kept saying, hey, how come we're not included? And I said, well, you know, look, black women in our culture have carried the family structure since the beginning of time. It was time for me to make sure that black men in our community understood that, hey, you got to share the load here. So it was purposeful by intent, and then and 3 years into it, we brought women in, and obviously, you know, this is probably the great venue to say that in, but it actually enhanced the program considerably. So I know that's a long way to get there, but there's really no shortcut to getting to that answer.
Well, a lot of really good deposits that you've given us to chew on. You know, quite frankly, simply, you just pretty much in a nutshell from what I'm hearing, you see a need, you fill it. You get it done. You just see
it,
and you get it done.
I'm an impatient person. I hate meetings that don't have immediate outcomes. And everybody who works for me will tell you that if we're going to have a meeting, at the end of the day, everybody's got to get a takeaway, and when we come back, I want to know if it's done or not. You know, I don't like a whole lot of verbiage and a whole lot of planning when what needs to be done is right in front of us. And so a lot of the initiatives that I've worked on are those kind of things that are just observational. You know, in other words, you know, the weeds are growing. Let's pull the weeds. You know, we don't need to plan that out 4 or 5 days. Let's just pull the weeds.
Wow. Well, you know, how does one with such a beautiful, wonderful vision and assignment, a godly assignment, which is what I would call it, and we're going off questions now because we're freestyling now, but how did you find these men, and how did you hold them accountable? In other words, you're talking about people mm-hmm. without hope, people with despair, people that mm-hmm. have constantly had doors shut in their faces, broken promises, mm-hmm. you know, called names by friends, family, neighbors, strangers. Mm-hmm. How do you take a broken down, beaten down man and get his attention?
That's interesting you should say that, because this is going to sound incredibly callous. I don't know another way to say it, quite frankly, but that's just who I am. I'm sort of a tough love kind of person, but the emphasis on love, you know, everything you just said, I've heard a billion times from people. But, you know, when you come from that environment, you know, my mother gave me up me and my brothers up when I was 12 years old. She didn't want us. We spent a year and a half in juvenile home waiting for people to take me and my brothers. My sister ultimately wound up in the streets and was murdered when she was 18 years of age, my baby sister. And I was 21 years of age, and at that point I had every intention to go back and rescue my family. I was able to bring my two brothers to college with me, but I never had enough time in my life to go back and get my sister. And so I've always been charged with this idea that sometimes, you know, adversity and all the things that are ugly in life just don't wait for you to get there. They don't wait for you to catch up, which means that time is not an ally. You got to go do it right now. So when I hear stories like that, I don't sit back and question or rationalize or, you know, or even try to refute. My response to them is, okay, and now what? I don't do yesterdays very well, but I'm really good at tomorrows, you know, given that God gives me the breath to do it. But I plan my todays for tomorrow, not my days for yesterday. And so I share with them that I can appreciate all of that adversity. I can do it. I feel you. And we got this one wonderful moment to expel that out of your system. But, you know, when you're done on this shoulder, you don't get the other shoulder. It's time to go. And I think, you know, with a lot of young black men in particular who have not had that role model, that model that doesn't just continuously allow them to bury themselves into what's wrong with the world, and somebody who says, you know what, I can't do that well, but I can show you a different world. And that's why it's so important that you do it. You know, I had to take time out of my day, and I've been blessed to be able to do that. I couldn't just give them my business card and say, hey, look, tell them Jimmy Green sent you in there. I had to take them in. And so when I took them in there for the day, I stayed with them the entire time. And that brings a credible index. So when you walk into the room, you know, they're not them. They're Jimmy Green's guys. And that's half the battle right there. So and when I told them at our orientation system, I said, look, I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me because this is important to me. This was my give back. This is what I need to do in order to further you. Now, I'm not going to call you in the morning and tell you what time it is. I'm not going to come pick you up. I'm not going to babysit you. I'm going to do my part. You do your part. And at the end of the day, we've both done our parts, and we've got something really good to do. And that's always been my message in and out in every single day. Let's do tomorrow. And yesterday is somebody you can sit around in the corner and yak. I don't do that well. So, you know, how I do it is I just do me. And, you know, I think it's easier when you just do you and you just kind of, you know, put a hitch on the back of you and just tell everybody to hang on. You know, I'm not good at stopping to pick up people, but I'm off good at adding them online. You know?
My goodness. You know, I had a question for you that you've already answered. You know, it was about, but I want to share it with you because it, you know, your story has blessed me, and I thank God for the healing that has taken place in your life, and it does heal us to help people, and that's one of the messages that I deliver every day. Is I receive happiness, joy, and love when I give it. Period.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you obviously have crossed some railroad tracks, you know, in your life, you know, and some railroad crossings, and you've picked the right tracks to take, you know, and I want to say, you know, that is remarkable, and it takes discipline, you know, and it also takes other people doing for you what you're doing for others. Is there someone in particular that influenced your life, Mr. Green?
Yeah, there were two when I started, there were two people who had their eye on me, and I've learned that eye thing too. There one guy, his name was Harold Evans, and Harold Evans was the controller of the bank that I worked at when I first started. And Harold Evans did something for me that I have never forgotten, and it was one of the cornerstones behind the leadership program I built. I was working, and he came up to me and he says, "You got a second?" I said, "Sure." I mean, he was the controller of the bank, you know, and I mean, he was this big, looming personality, just, and he has this big, giant laugh that you could hear all the way down the hallway, and he intimidated me to no end. So he called me into his office, and he says, you know what, you're going to go places in this bank, and I'm going to help you get there. Now, why he did that, it wasn't mine to question. But he took me to lunch, and he took me to lunch at the Saginaw Club. And this Saginaw Club was, it sounds like, it is what it sounds like. It's a prestigious, place where all the power brokers in the city went. And he took me, and we went into this small room, a small little private dining room. And it was immaculately set up. And he says to me, I'm going to teach you these social settings. And he spent an hour with me teaching me protocol, teaching me how to use silverware. There was something about him that he saw in me that I would never admit to, which was I didn't know. And so he didn't allow me to ask questions. He just provided answers. I never forgot that. We had a great lunch. He told me that he wanted me involved in something, and he picked three organizations for me to join. And he said, before you do that, I want you to meet somebody. So he introduced me to Henry Marsh, who was the first black mayor in Saginaw. And Henry Marsh at that point became my surrogate father, because Henry Marsh was the first person who taught me what tough love was. And they both took an incredible active interest in where I was, telling me, be where you're supposed to be. And they made sure that I was in the right rooms with the right people, and the rest of it was mine. And then that's how I got involved in board service. And Henry Marsh said to me, and this is something that's the byline on our leadership group, if you serve this city, it will serve you. Mm-hmm. And I never forgot that. And that's something I teach all the people in the leadership group.
So that those two simple. People. Yeah, that incredible. Is simply the truth. That is simply the mm-hmm. truth. I'm going to ask you one more question and a comment before I bring a caller on the line to join our conversation. We have several people that would like to speak with you, and so we're going to, again, to all the listeners out there, we will be, we have been blessed by this gentleman, Mr. Jimmy Green's agreement to come back and continue the conversation a second and, if necessary, a third time, so that we can really learn about who he is, how he does it, and how we can be impacted by his journey.
Think it's me that's been blessed, quite frankly. I think anybody who cares enough about your story and wants to listen, I think that's a blessing. So.
Well, Mr. President of the Board of Directors, I just love saying that. Mr. President of the Board of Directors of the International Academy of Saginaw, what led to the birthing of this academy?
It's a charter school. The Saginaw school system was failing miserably our children, and there was an opportunity to bring in a more specific charter school that was designed purposely to address that. I'm a huge advocate of public schools. I've got six kids. All six of my kids are educated in public schools, so this is not a public school bashing. But what it did was it was this opportunity to vacate the traditional curriculum and start addressing some of the social issues that were coming inside the school that public schools couldn't address because they're so full of bureaucracies and age-old processes that they can't navigate around them. So what we did was we built this charter school that was a K-2, purposely, K-2. We were going to build our graduation classes along the way. So we had to go through these standards we had to meet the state with, and we purposely did that so that at the end of every year we had to submit the standards that they had to grant us to add an additional year. So if we were going to fail, we'd have to close the school down because we couldn't do a third grade. And so that put a huge pressure on the school, the board, the teachers, but it put everybody in line because it made sure that if we failed, every single person failed because the school would close. And you talk about having strange bedfellows when you've got teachers, administrators, and a board completely in line, which is survivability. You know who the byproduct of that is? The kids. The kids,
wow.
The kids win. And those kids have benefited, they have outperformed every surrounding school district around there. And you know what? We're no different than anybody else, quite frankly. It's just that when everybody's in concert, you kill the political stuff. You kill all that other ugly stuff. And I'm very, very proud of that school. We just added our seventh grade if that gives you any indication on our success. So we now have a seventh grade.
Wow. Very impressive, and we are very excited to have you with us. And as you know, that the National Association of Black Women in Construction is also focused on reaching, growing, and nurturing our children. You're also aware that it is our desire to work with you in hopes that we can incorporate some of your already mastered techniques into our own programs that we're developing across the country, you know, and also with, you know, our being a blessing to our children. I would love to, at this time, invite Ann McNeil, the founder of the National Association of Black Women in Construction, to our conversation. She's waiting to speak with you. Something's going on with Ann's phone. Let's try that again. Okay. I'm going to put her back on hold. Hopefully she can hang up and call back in. There's some activity happening with her line. I'll try her back in a moment. Currently, what are you involved in currently, and what does it take to juggle a life, children and grandchildren, working in the community? You have political responsibilities. My. So, what does it look like to juggle that?
It doesn't. It's just a calendar. You know, I think most of us do what we want to do. You know, I don't do all the things I wish I could do, but I do all the things I'm supposed to do. And, you know, family is incredibly important to me, again, with six kids, and I just had my first grandbaby, which I'm absolutely thrilled about, my granddaughter, Adriana, so I'm giving a shout-out to Adriana in Phoenix. I just serve. I love it. You know, you talked earlier about commitment, dedication, discipline. I tell you what the word is, though. And you said it earlier in our conversation. It's that word passion. You know, I never have to put passion on a calendar. It just goes with me. So I always make it a point that wherever I am, it's with me. So you just find time to do the thing you love to do the most. And I can honestly tell you, I don't think I'm doing one thing that I don't have a wonderful passion for. There are different degrees of it, but passion nevertheless. I don't know, and I never stop and ask myself that question you just asked me, because then I realize how busy I am, and I wind up taking something off. So I just do it.
Powerful.
I've
Absolutely.
Never had a good answer to that question.
Let's try Ann's line again. Let's see. Okay. Well, unfortunately, we're having difficulties with opening her line. But the good news is she's going to have another opportunity, hopefully next week. Mr. Green, you'll be available to meet back with us to continue our conversation regarding your journey, our journey, and how we may be able to collectively work together to affect change with our children.
Yeah, what you guys are doing is incredible. I will always make time for you because you are absolutely critical, absolutely critical. Your examples, your mentorship, your faces, you know, who you are is a picture, is a face long required and needed in inner cities all across this country to show the possibilities out there. And if there's anything I can do to further that, I am going to be on board. And so I'm not going to worry about how it fits on my calendar. I'm just going to get it on there.
You know, I cannot wait to meet you, Mr. Green. You know that to meet you again, I guess I should say, I met you briefly in Washington.
Yeah.
Very briefly. during a conference that you and Ann McNeil were attending. I was fortunate enough to spend 5 or 10 minutes with you. But am looking forward to, because as you, I also believe in just get it done. So we will, there will be some members from the National Association of Black Women in Construction coming out to Michigan to visit with you, because we realize, you know, when we align with people that have, that are like-minded, have the same goals, visions, and aspirations, we just get things done. You know, there's power in unity. There's power in unity. We know that unity is a powerful force. So what I'd like to do at this point is give you the last voice of our conversation. Would you care to share any closing remarks at this time?
Just real quick, and I said it earlier, whatever I can do to help further your interest is actually furthering my own interest. I am still this piece of work and art. You know, I believe in evolution in all the right ways, and I'm still evolving, and this relationship has helped me even further that. So I feel incredibly blessed that my story has some resonation on anybody, anywhere, and I'm more than willing to help anytime you guys need me. So.
Wow, thank you. Again, we want to thank you, Mr. Jimmy Green, for joining us this morning. You have many, many, many associations, but the one that we know is at the top of your list is the Association of Builders and Contractors, where you are touching many countries and many people across the world. So we thank you for joining us. We'd like to thank all of our listeners for joining in, and we are the National Association of Black Women in Construction. We are the voice of Black Women in Construction. Please tweet, retweet, share, post, and email. Thank you for joining us, and I'm Tanya Marble, signing off.